now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpit, here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? And welcome to Life from the Pulpit, the cutting edge in biblical exposition, coming to you on location in Merced, California, home of the Merced Church of Christ. This is the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, where I, your humble correspondent, the voice of the valley, Nick Perez, offer up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Greetings, and welcome to the program. I've alluded to it in the past, and now we're actually going to do it. This is the show, the episode, about abortion. And abortion is an epidemic in our culture. Some call it the modern-day Holocaust in America. And if you have been born since Roe versus Wade, 1973, you're a survivor of the Holocaust. And it's not so much that you can sit there, well, you know, my mom would have never had an abortion. The fact that she had the choice, the option, well, you ought to thank God that you're even alive. And abortion isn't just, it's not a recent issue, not a recent crisis. In fact, evidence suggests that abortion's been going on for a long, long time, approximately 4,000 years. I've got an article open here on my Bible software from the Anchor Bible Dictionary about abortion in antiquity. And it's been going on for a long time. What's interesting is 1965, fast forward to America, all 50 states by 1965 had some kind of ban on abortions. But of course, Roe versus Wade, not even a decade later. Well, that's influenced that. Abortion, what are we talking about? We're talking about the termination of a pregnancy resulting in the death of a baby. That's what abortion is. Termination of a pregnancy resulting in the death of a baby, which, by the way, a baby is both a gift and a reward from God. So it's the termination, the death of the marvelous and beautiful gifts and rewards of God. That's what abortion is. Psalm 127, verse 3, this is the passage which speaks to that. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. The fruit of the womb, a reward. I'll get it out. That's what the English Standard Version says. Other versions talk about how children are a gift from God. And so that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the termination, the extermination, the genocide of the gifts and rewards of God. The value of human life is incalculable. That's represented by the fact that God gave His Son to show us just how valuable human life is. And we live in a godless society, godless secular society, which devalues life in order to justify abortion. And not only that, but our society attempts to use the Bible to support pro-abortion positions. I mean, it's incredible. Every day, depending upon, you know, the research that you look at, 3,000 to 4,000 babies every day are aborted. They're murdered, slaughtered. Let me see, did I keep that page up? Yes, the five steps of partial birth abortion. Here's the process of murder. First, the physician is guided by ultrasound, and the abortionist grabs the baby's legs with forceps. Second, the baby's leg is pulled out into the birth canal. Third, the abortionist delivers the baby's entire body except for the head. Fourth, the abortionist jams scissors into the baby's skull. The scissors are then opened to enlarge the skull. Fifth, the scissors are removed. A suction catheter is inserted. The baby's brains are sucked out, causing the skull to collapse. And the dead baby is then removed. That's unbelievable. You didn't know that, did you? You didn't know the process of abortion. Well, there you go. That's just one form, one way. There's saline solutions that are inserted into the womb in order to burn the baby. Some babies actually survive that. And our current president supported legislation in the Illinois state legislature that would allow these babies that survived botched abortions to be left alone and ultimately die a slow and apparently painful death. That's who we elected into the highest office in the land. I'm just saying. Maybe you, in the past, you're listening to this program and you're listening to all this data and you're feeling guilt over a past abortion. Or maybe you're out there and you're feeling grief because of your participation in the past with abortion. To the guilt-stricken and the grief-ridden, there is a solution and an answer. The solution and the answer is Jesus. Obedience to the gospel. Having all of your sins forgiven by the precious blood of God's Son. And oh, by the way, this is the point where some of you skeptics out there will raise your voice and say, well, God aborted his son. No. Jesus went willingly. Second person of the Godhead, by the way. He went willingly to the cross. He laid down his life of his own accord. Get it straight. We literally live in a country where hospitals, in one room, they're working feverishly and fervently to save a baby. And in another room, they're killing a baby. And that baby may be older than the baby they're trying to save, still in the womb, in utero, in the very same hospital. Are we taking crazy pills in this country? This is, statistically speaking, the womb is the most dangerous place in the world, period. So what do we do? What do we do as Christians in this culture, this society? We need to be prepared. We always need to have an answer for the hope that is within us, right? So what do we say? What do we tell people? What are the logical but also biblical, more importantly biblical, responses to those who are pro-choice? That is to say, they're pro-abortion. Allow me to give you the tools here. It comes down to one question. And this shout out to my boy Joshua Brom, who has compiled this very reasoned response to the abortion question. It comes down to one simple question, and that is, what is the unborn? That entity which is yet in utero, or is it a human or is it not a human? If it's not a human, then no explanation for abortion is necessary. But if it is a human, then no explanation for abortion is adequate. And there are some who maybe try to circumvent, and they'll say, well, you know, it's not living. You know, it's not... How do you define living? Because to me, it's got a that baby has a beating heart. At 22 days old, it's got a beating heart. And it's growing. And it responds to stimuli. Tell me something that's not growing and doesn't respond to stimuli that's not living. Now, that is growing, that does respond to stimuli, and is not living. And so then there are those, well, of course it's living. It must be. That's your definition of life. It's got a beating heart. It's growing. It's responding to stimuli. That's what living things do. Well, then they'll say, well, it's not human. That's when you can point them astutely to the law of biogenesis. Law of biogenesis, which, by the way, is biblical, is that living things reproduce after their own kind. Cats have cats. Dogs have dogs. Humans have... And so that baby must be a human, right? That thing in utero must be human. Well, okay, maybe they'll concede that it is living. And that it is human, but it's not a person. It's not a person. And therefore, since it's not a person, it's not valuable and has no right to life. That's what it comes down to. Only persons have value and only persons have a right to life. And that baby isn't a person until they pass through the 8 inches of birth canal. Really? Josh Brahms, he gives the fourfold difference between humans and embryos. Humans out of the utero and humans in utero. Because they are humans, just they're not persons. Well, at any rate, the four things, you can boil it down to the acronym SLED. Size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. Okay? SLED. S-L-E-D. S-L-E-D. First, let's take size. Size. So because someone is bigger, they're more valuable? Just on an average scale, men are larger in size than women. Are men more valuable than women? Of course not. Because I'm bigger than my wife, I'm more valuable than her, right? That's how we're determining value. Because those are the only differences, by the way, between a human and an embryo. Size. So because someone's bigger. Shaquille O'Neal is probably larger than most people on the face of the planet. Is he more valuable than any one of us? No. No. Okay. Dr. Seuss, let's cite the great doctor himself. A person's a person no matter the size, right? Well, what about level of development? You know, the baby's not as far developed, isn't as developed as something outside of the womb. You know, let's say a two-year-old. Yeah, but a two-year-old's not as developed as, say, I don't know, me? My two-year-old son is not as developed as me. Am I more valuable than him? So that human in utero who isn't as developed as me, or does that make him less valuable than me? No. What about environment? Does location determine value? You know, I've been in Texas, Kansas, Arizona, back in California now. Was I more valuable in Texas than I am here in California? Was I more valuable in Kansas than I was in Arizona? Just because we change location doesn't make us more valuable. Finally, degree of dependency. And that's the by the way, the environment thing. So a baby passes through the 8 inches of the birth canal from womb out into the air, and that makes them valuable? Degree of dependency, you know, I've got a 9-month-old as well. very dependent upon mama. Does that make him more valuable than, say, my 2-year-old who isn't as dependent upon mama? We got several teenagers here. You probably got a teenager in your house. And they need you to drive them around everywhere. Because they haven't got a driver's license yet. You're telling me that until they're not dependent upon you for a ride, until they get a driver's license, now they got that little piece of plastic, now they're valuable because they're not as dependent? Degree of dependency? Again, those are the only four differences between that human in the womb and the human out of the womb. Size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. Do these change value? No. Where does value come from? The biblical answer is Genesis 1, verses 26 and 27. God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over all every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. It's that image, the Imago Dei, as the ancients used to talk about. Because we are created in the image of God, that's the metaphysical difference that gives us value. And by the way, that's equal for all people. All are created in the image of God. Everyone, therefore, is equally valuable. And oh, by the way, this is the more inclusive view. More inclusive than those who would assign value to a person out of the utero and would say, no, that's not that person, that human in utero is not a person, is not valuable. That's an exclusive view. This is the more inclusive view. Well, you get through all that, and you determine that, no, they're not more valuable and therefore do not have more of a right to life. Everyone's got a right to life. Every human in utero has a right to life. Then maybe, just maybe, if they're smart enough, they'll get to the point where they'll say, well, wait a minute. It's her body. She's got the right to choose. That's part of her body. To which you can look at them and politely reply, what? What? What do you mean? That's part of her body. That's another human. It's got its own fingerprints. It's got its own DNA. It's got its own blood type. And then on top of all that, if you're saying that's part of her body, then for 9 months out of the year, that woman has 2 noses, 20 fingers, 20 toes, 4 eyes and ears, and oh, in half the cases, she's got a working penis and testicles. Well, no, that's not what I meant. No, that's exactly what you said. Pray tell, what did you mean when you said it's part of her body? Finally, Mr. Brom has given us what he calls the trot out the toddler argument. SLED, size, level, development, environment, degree of dependency, that demonstrates that value is equal. Equal value all around for humans in utero or out of the womb. But their argument also works for the toddler too. If we're going to talk about how size and level of development, that somehow imparts value, then you know they'll start bringing up case studies like minorities. You know, minorities, they need abortion. Because here's this woman, here's this family, they have 9 children, and oh my goodness, she just found out she's pregnant, and they're going to have another child. They just can't afford it. They need the option of abortion. Well, if that's the case, then why don't we take the youngest of the nine children, the little two-year-old or something like that, and why don't we kill that two-year-old baby? That way we can make sure we have rent. Well, no, wait, that's different. Why? Well, that's a human. That's a person. Oh. And then we got them right where we need them because that's where you can take them back to. Well, then what is the unborn? Is it human or not? If it's a human, well, the same stuff can be said in terms of this toddler, this two-year-old, as can be said about that little baby in utero. And there's one more thing, because they'll typically go to the most touchy of subjects, very controversial, very delicate, and Brahm advocates caution, because they'll ask about rape. Well, what about a woman who's raped? She was raped. Are you going to punish her with a baby? And oh, by the way, that's language. I didn't come up with that language. That's language our president has used about his own daughters. He doesn't want them punished with a baby if they make a mistake. So I'm just saying, that's just what he said. I'm going to get in trouble for quoting the man? When it comes to rape, we do need empathy. And in fact, we need empathy. We need the pathos in all of this. We've got the logos. We've got the stuff to say. And hopefully we've got the ethos, the proper way of living. But we need the pathos. We need the sympathy. We need the empathy, especially when we're dealing with something like rape. Rape is a horrible crime. It's awful. You're assaulting this woman. Rape under the old law, POD, punishable on death. They didn't stand for it. Coincidentally, there are actually people in our culture who advocate for the rights of rapists. And in fact, they uphold the rights of the rapist more than they uphold the rights of the victim. Rape is a horrible crime. I don't know that we punish it severely enough. The rapist is going to get charged with, one crime, when in fact he's created several. He's forced this woman. He's forced himself upon the woman. And then, if she gets pregnant, he's forced her to become a mother. And then he's forced her to make one of the hardest choices in her life with that unborn baby. Does she, A, raise the child as her own, which is going to cost her a lot of money? B, put the child up for adoption? Or C, abort the baby, which is always the wrong choice? So, yeah, it's awful. I don't know if we punish it. I don't think we punish it enough. But here's the thing. How should we treat the unwanted in our society? Not only just an unwanted human in the womb, but an unwanted human out of the womb. Oh. Let me get to the sponsor of this half hour. This half hour brought to you by Christian Book Distributors. As I've said before, as a preacher, I need good tools for Bible study. And I go to Christian Book Distributors to get all of my Christian books and Bibles at bargain prices. They've got a large selection of Christian fiction, kids' books, Christian music, DVDs, books, both classics and contemporaries, and, of course, Bibles. With this large selection, CBD is sure to have exactly what you need. Go online and visit www.christianbook.com or call 1-800-CHRISTIAN. That's 1-800-247-4784. Christian Book Distributor, serving the Christian community for 30 years. Children are. They're a heritage. They're a gift from God. They're a reward, and they must be protected. They are the weakest among us. They are the most innocent among us. We need to be prepared. Okay, I've got a few minutes left here. Let's do question of the day.
Question of the day.
This question, do animals have souls? Maybe you've heard it phrased this way. Do all dogs go to heaven? Again, do animals have souls? Short answer, no. Uh-oh. Yeah, I just opened a can, didn't I? Oh, boy. I didn't tell you if the children are listening, turn off. I'm sorry. But no, they don't. Fido does not. And that's the thing, right? We live in a society which says kill the babies but save the whales. That's But here's the thing. Animals have souls. We typically think of Fido. Fido has a soul. And if Fido has a soul, then what about not only the kitty cat, but also the horsey, the wolverine, the lion, the tiger, and oh, how about the whale in the ocean? Sharks, does Jaws have a... We like Fido having a soul, but what about Jaws having a soul? We don't understand the implications that this kind of thing has. So, but let me put it to you this way. First, when it comes to the animals, man and animal are different. And in fact, the Genesis account points to the fact that man is different than the animal. Man is the crown jewel of God's creation. That's seen in chapter 1. Everything is created, and then man is created. Why? Because everything is created for man. But there's something unique, as I already pointed out earlier in the show. Man is created in the image and likeness of God. In the image of God, he is created, male and female, he created them. Man has that intrinsic value of having the image of God within him. Now, how that gets parsed out, what exactly that image is, maybe that's another show. But there's something unique, something different about the man. Of no other creature on the face of the planet, is it said, it's created in the image of God. Further, in the Genesis account, chapter 2, God breathes into man the breath of life, breathes into his nostril the breath of life. And another word for breath, another way that can be translated from the Hebrew, is also spirit. He breathed in him the spirit of life. No other creature is that said about. No other, no, not doggies, not kitties, not horses, not sharks. And even then, you got to expand it beyond that, because if we're talking about living creatures, living things, then why don't trees have souls too? Or the grass, or coral in the ocean. No, we don't think that way. We only care about Fido, or maybe, you know, some other animal like that. God, only man is created in the image of God, and only God breathes into man the breath of life. He is the spiritual being. He's the one. And so, no, all dogs do not go to heaven, because all dogs do not have souls. Now, let me give you one more passage here and deal with it quickly about do animals have souls. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. Someone reading through the Bible might come to the conclusion that because man and animal, they have the same fate, same destiny, they have the same spirit. Why? Listen to the words of Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 18. I said in my heart with regard to children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts, for what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. Here's the thing. The writer of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, very late in his life, very bitter it would seem, but he's writing in exaggeration, hyperbole. Notice that in the same verse that he says, man and animal, they have the same breath or same spirit. He also says, everything's meaningless. Everything's meaningless. Really? Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. God, in the truth of his word, allows us to see the untruth in Solomon's, I would say, jaded view of life and the world. We know that everything is not meaningless. In fact, the most meaningful thing in the world is the gospel. I'm out of time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. I always like to hear what you have to say. Search Facebook for the Life from the Pulpit page. And like us on Facebook. Now on iTunes, search the iTunes store for the Live from the Pulpit podcast. You get all the shows when they go up. Also, follow me on Twitter, @inpulpit, @N as in Nick Pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Be sure and stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, www.lifefromthepulpit.wordpress.com. All of my commentary on Luke, James, 1 John, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. I just updated the blog today with new material in 1 John. You're going to want to check that out. Also, check out Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org, mercedchurchofchrist.org. Plenty of sermon audio there to help you in your daily Bible study as well. And as always, brethren, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.